Joining me now for the March edition of Our Town is Bobby King with R&R King Logging, Jennifer King Wagner, who's also there. What's the hierarchy now? Are you still...
Yeah, thanks for having us, George.
You're welcome.
Kay and I are the principal owners, but Jennifer and Danny are right there as, you know, I'm just the president and they're the vice president, so... What they say still goes. I don't have much say anymore.
Yeah.
They're kind of trying to...
Is that good or bad?
It's
kind of good, but you know what I've
sure
told them,
what
I've told them is I'm working on a book, and it's called How to Be in Control After I'm Gone. I don't know if it'll fly or not.
I don't know. If you can maintain control after you're gone, that would be a trick for sure.
I know it.
You know, we've talked about this before, about how, you know, essential logging is and how Oregon has the most abundant natural resources mm-hmm. available in the 50 states and, you know, possibly around most of the world even, maybe.
Exactly.
I mean, with the exception of
yep.
a certain place there. But yet it seems like they want to get farther and farther away from logging as a principal business in the state of Oregon and many other states. What's the current situation with your business and how it relates to the amount of available resources and what you're allowed to do?
Good question. It all boils down to land ownership. The federal government, BLM, Forest Service, own about 60% of the 70% of the land base that holds the timber. The rest is private, some state-owned, and some, of course, the
federal, the
tribes own a portion also. But what it boils down to is they've tied up all the Forest Service government, federal government timber sales. And it's kind of a fallacy because they keep saying, well, we're having these timber sales. What they have are little thinning sales that is 10 times more expensive to harvest than if we were to do our type of clear-cut logging. And we operate on private ground. Very seldom do we get on any government ground except for a few state sales. The state of Oregon does put up a few sales. But no federal, no BLM, no Forest Service in our category, which is clear cutting. But they do put up, just to kind of ease the pain, and they make it sound like, well, we put up 10 million feet, 12 million feet of timber sales this last year. That is nothing. I mean, I log, 30 million feet a year. So just me, just R&R King Logging. So when the government puts up these timber sales, they make it sound like, because to the ordinary person, wow, 10, 12 million feet, that sounds like a lot of wood. It's not a lot of wood. One log truck load is 5,000 board feet. So,
and how many companies are competing for those small sales in the state of Oregon?
Well, the small sales in the state of Oregon, there are a lot of, there's probably 10, 12, 15 people that bid on those. The private landowners who export their timber aren't allowed to bid on any federal or state sales. Therefore, they're kind of disqualified. But the private landowners that have their own manufacturing plant, like Seneca, Roseburg Forest Products, Swanson Group, they have their own manufacturing plant. So they buy sales to run through their manufacturing. They don't buy sales to export. So consequently, they are allowed to bid on those government sales, but they also have their own private wood to harvest also. So it boils down to we do most of our operating on private land, which is mostly actually we're logging some timber for Rainier Corporation, which is a large corporation. This is something that's interesting. These large corporations like Rainier, Hancock, Campbell Group have their own private timber tracts. And they're backed by investors. And a lot of the big investors are like California Teachers Union, the PERS program, are invested in timber harvests and timber. And consequently, it's kind of an oxymoron because they fight timber sales, the unions, and that group of people fight timber sales. But yet their PERS is all based on the return.
It's funded by.
Funded by timber. And so it's kind of it's kind of a mixed bag, but at the same time, those companies like Rainier, Campbell Group, and Hancock, the private big land owners who do not have their own manufacturing plant, actually market their wood on the open market. So they go wherever the price is right, and if it's export, it goes export. If it's to the private mills domestic, then it goes there. So we log for those groups too, and most of our logs are sorted to go to different manufacturers in the state of Oregon. So
one of the things that's come up in the last couple of years is the CAT tax, corporate activities tax. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming, and you can correct me or you can, that the cost of harvesting timber is going up faster than the price of timber you're getting back is.
We're awful close. It's not necessarily the price of timber, it's the amount of dollars that we get for harvesting. We contract log. And logging, I don't. People just, I don't think they understand, is very, very expensive. One breakdown can be $30,000 to $40,000. Rotex goes out in a log loader, which is the big bearing that the house swivels on, $35,000, just like that. And that goes out about once every 5 years on all of our machines. We got 10 of them. So, you know, you have those kind of expenses. So what I'm driving at, the key here is our margin of profit is so narrow that when they incorporate a tax on the gross revenue, the amount of dollars that comes in your door, they don't tax on what's left. They tax on what's coming in the door. That puts us in the red. I mean, that could very easily put us in the red where when our margin's so thin, we have just a slight profit, and then the tax comes in, the CAT tax comes in, and it takes away from our profit margin. Jennifer has more on that.
Yeah. Well, just to be clear, that CAT tax is on, again, the gross receipts. Well,
and so, explain a little bit about the CAT tax. I mean, they're taxing you on the money you make over a certain amount.
Yes. Right? The money that comes in the door, basically. So we might have even a 0% profit margin, or we might even have lost money during that quarter, but it's based on our total gross dollars in the door. So it makes no sense at all. Mm-hmm. So typically, you know, you would pay taxes on your profit. You would write off your expenses and all your different things, your cost of doing business, and you would pay taxes on your profit, on the net. But this corporate activity tax is actually on the total dollars in the door.
There is a base.
I think it's a million.
$1 million. After $1 million, then your tax, this percentage. I don't even like to say it out loud, but our total dollars run around $30,000 to $40,000 a year on that gross tax.
Wow.
And it's not there for us to pay. So people, be aware. We would like to be able to pass that on in our logging costs to the manufacturers, to the timber companies that we log for. Therefore, they would have to tack that on to the end product. That's kind of like doing the thinning sales. It's 10 times more expensive to do a thinning sale versus a clear cut. Well, if these mills buy all thinning sales, then they have to add that total dollars, the cost to harvest that, onto the end product. It's going to be prohibited. Mm-hmm. So clear cutting is by far, and I've said it before, but I just want to reinforce, is clear cutting is a necessity for you to be able to build your house at a reasonable price. The CAP tax is not helping.
Let me add this in too, though. This is a statistic I got yesterday. According to a recent study by Ernst & Young, which is an accounting firm, businesses in Oregon's forest product sector, on average, have a tax burden that is 1.5 times greater than the other typical Oregon businesses. 1.5 times for the forest products companies like ours. So that doesn't get shared. And they're actually looking at additional new taxes specifically for the forest product sector in the Oregon legislature right now. Currently, forest sector businesses pay real property taxes on their land. They pay personal property taxes on their equipment, payroll taxes, state income taxes, the CAT tax, forest products harvest taxes, and the list goes on and on. In addition to that, we have the highest workers' comp rate because of our industry, our workers being in such a dangerous job. So all those things just really, really add up. And we're starting to see the effects of it where people are starting to leave the state, forest products companies.
Seems to me like we should be throwing tea in the harbor at this point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
But let me ask you this. I mean, maybe this is my ignorance, but they sort of put the cat tax in there because they didn't have enough revenue, but yet they don't let you log enough that logging money that they generate from that could go to pay some of the things. Is this like
right.
Stupid politics or,
yes.
or stupid?
It is. And then I always like to add in, you know, that corporate activities tax, they changed it. Once it comes into the school district, they call it the Student Success Act. They conveniently relabel it.
Well, that sounds really good.
Doesn't that sound really good? But what happens is, you know, either education is a priority for our governor or it isn't. And in my opinion, it should be. And if it is, you provide stable funding for it. You don't throw a corporate activities tax based on gross revenue on as the saving grace to, you know, a successful schools act. It's not honest.
Well, and I understand that the weight the governor carries in this too, but isn't the federal government also responsible for some of this by not mm-hmm. not allowing some of the cutting and not allowing the thinning out of the forests?
Yes, absolutely. I got to jump in on this.
Okay.
So one of the things that we just dealt with, obviously, were the Labor Day forest fires. And as we well know, a lot of those fires were created because of the lack of harvest and lack of management on federal forests that just created a complete fuel source that fueled those fires. And once one gets going, there's no place to stop because it's solid, dead, and decaying timber.
Well, if I could add to that, this was an all-time high-risk time in our where we are, that with the extreme east winds, the extreme heat, we were home, afraid of a spark because there was no stopping any kind of a spark that could start in this kind of extreme weather. And when it got started by, they say, power lines, possible, maybe, probably. But when that got started, there was no stopping that thing because of the east winds, because of the dry humidity and the temperatures. Therefore, because we had no clear cuts or areas to get in and to slow it down, or there are a lot of fuel on the timber ground, and especially the government, it was no stopping it. It was just hell bent. It was just going right through everything. And so have you been up to McKenzie?
I went up through 126 and going into Sisters and that, and just looking at the devastation mm-hmm. of the houses. And then, you know, the people, the few people that were lucky that were totally missed, and then their neighbor across the street was totally devastated.
No rhyme or reason for that, except maybe the wind current took a different direction at that time.
Well, and then we also had the near disaster in Mapleton.
Yes.
You know, with some guy starting a fire there. And and it's just, you know, that was averted, luckily.
Yes.
So the number, it says here, 470,000 acres of forests owned by the federal government burned in Oregon last year. 470,000 acres. And, you know, the people that are next to forests that are held by the federal government that have privately held lands really are at a disadvantage because they have the worst neighbors ever, right? You take care of your stuff, but you're sort of at the mercy of your neighbor. And that's unfortunately what happened to a lot of private landowners, was they were affected negatively by that. And so on private lands, they've already started harvesting that timber, replanting, looking toward the future. But it sounding like they're having a lot of resistance to harvesting and replanting on the federal lands, which at this point, it seems so logical that they would take those burned areas and make the best out of them. But they're saying that at this point, only 1.8% of the total burned federal acres are looking at removing the trees and replanting. Only 1.8% of all those federal lands.
Now, we don't know how many feet is in that 470,000 acres, but you probably have a good idea what is in there. How much lost revenue for companies was there because that just burned? A lot?
Well, billions. Here's the thing about the burned timber sales, especially on the private ground, like the large companies like Seneca, Swanson Group, Roseburg Forest Products, all had thousands and thousands of acres burned. there's two things here. One is they have a burn tree who burns on the outside, the phloem and the xylem, which is the outside, and the bark burns. That heartwood doesn't necessarily, that's what I'm saying, never necessarily does not burn. If that fire moves too quick, it scorches and makes it black. But it doesn't really harm that wood. So they've got salvageable wood to get in. So these mills, for three main reasons, is they want to get the log off to get what value out of it they have. And if they don't, then it lays there and rots in no time. But one of the main reasons is the bugs get in it. And once the bugs get into those dead trees, and it goes into the ground to the live trees, wherever the live trees are, and it just creates a big bug infested area that kills all the trees. So they need to get in and harvest that wood, get in there and get it harvested to salvage it, to keep the bug infestation out, and to get it replanted. You need to plant that ground. Now, we've run into some problems on this, and maybe I'm out of whack here, but we've run into some problems because what's happened with so many acres being burned, and a lot of loggers had their equipment burned up. So they're having trouble finding people to go in and harvest this, salvage this wood. But the other part of it is, once they get that wood harvested, they have to replant that ground. Well, it takes 2 years for the seedling to grow in order to be large enough to replant in the ground. So that land's going to lay there for over 2 to 3 years to get it replanted. And then the ground is so soft and loose, it's hard to stabilize. So they go through a winter without stabilizing that ground, and then you've got all kinds of slides and all kinds of messes. So the point being is they need to get in and harvest that wood as soon as they can. And the government, the federal government especially, if you've gone over to the Santiam Pass and you see the big fire before you get there on top of Hoodoo and in that area, they never touch that. Mm-hmm. The government thinks that's a natural burn and that's okay to leave that. So all that timber in there went to waste. And it got young trees growing up in it. But at the same time, it's going to take years and years. When they did not go in there and harvest that ground. If that had been private ground, it would have been harvested and replanted by hand. We'd have had a great forest gone.
What is the answer? Are you guys doing anything in Salem? Or do you have people there that are working toward maybe some more sensible legislation rather than the cat tax? How's that?
Well, our current representatives, Representative Boomer Wright and Senator Dick Anderson, definitely are in touch with what needs to happen. They're really common sense leaders, really reach out and try to get common sense information and facts. But they are only two in a very urban-based legislature. And what's happening right now in the legislature is really, really disappointing because there is absolutely no transparency. The legislature is closed to the public. People can't come in and testify. Meetings get changed at the last minute. In fact, there was some legislation this last week dealing with Oregon Forest Resources Institute, which is a public relations fact-based organization that supports our industry. It's paid for by our industry. And they are trying to defund it by changing the tax structure. So they changed the committee meeting last minute. And in doing so, all the testimony that people submitted for the original time got deleted. So those kind of things are happening over and over. And so it's not really a very legitimate process. And that really is, I think, where Oregonians need to, wherever you are on the spectrum as far as environmental issues or any of these other things, I think Oregonians need to step up and demand transparency and an opportunity to testify and for there to be honesty in the process. So there definitely are some new bills coming down the pike. Several of them look similar, which shows that they're very serious about doing it, which would increase actually harvest taxes. And it's the worst time for something like that to happen. I mean, it's never a good time, but especially with us already being at 1.5 times greater tax burden than other typical Oregon businesses. You know, really, we're the good guys. We have the best forest practices rules in the world. We grow trees better here than anywhere else in the world. It's not something we need to be ashamed of or be punished for. It's something we need to be thankful for. We provide products to the world. The world is demanding forest products, and it's because it's a clean, renewable product. You know, you go to the grocery store and really people want paper bags.
Yeah.
And we're the ones that provide it. And we just really would love to have the support of our friends and neighbors in doing what we do really well.
And environmentally, I mean, there's a big difference in pulling a load of iron ore out of the ground versus pulling trees out of the ground.
Yes.
You know, there you don't put anything back in the ground when that iron ore comes out. Just leaves a big hole, you know, yes. Versus with trees, you just replant.
I think they cover those holes now, George, with the virus.
But you're right.
That is not a renewable. That is not a renewable resource. If you don't mind, I want to go back just for a second. When you talked about the value of this private timber is important, but the value of the federal timber that's been off limits since the early days of the spotted owl, they put all that land out of reach, and I'm telling you, it gives you goosebumps to go up there and see this big beautiful trees that could be clear cut and then replanted, and that goes to our roads and
schools
and law enforcement. People wonder why are we always getting more taxes, because they're making up a deficit because we don't log our federal timber. A big portion of that federal timber goes to the counties, and that is what's wrong with our system today, and why we are bankrupt everywhere, and why they're leaning on the taxes to provide that dollar, which is breaking people. Instead of going up in the federal, if you ever drive up the end of the North Fork, go clear up into the Forest Service up there and just look at those acres and acres and acres and acres of trees that are growing on the federal land. We harvest 90% of our work from 1967 until the 80s was federal timber. And we were on our last timber sale. I want to tell you about this. We were on our last timber sale. And we were busy cutting on it, and the cutters normally go down to the bottom of the canyon, and then they fall the trees back and forth and work their way up, because you don't want a felon buck tree above you. They round and roll. So they work their way up, and they were coming up from the creek bottom. We had a great timber Forest Service timber sale. And I met up there with the company that bought the timber sale, and we were talking about when we're going to get in and harvest. And all of a sudden, here comes this green Forest Service pickup about 50 miles an hour, slid sideways, and this girl jumps out and says, "Stop cutting! Stop cutting!" We go, "What?" She said, a study done by a thesis by an Oregon State University, and I hate to say that out loud because it's my school, that was doing a thesis on the marble murrelet. And they think there may be marble murrelets here, so we're going to stop cutting on this. So we stopped cutting that in the 1982 or 81. 450,000 board feet of logs is still laying there rotted out in the bottom of that canyon. Government does not care about dollars. They don't care about finishing and cleaning that up. They just let that rot. That's dollars gone to waste. So I ran into the Forest Service guy a little bit later, and I said, "Where have you been? I haven't seen you for about a month." He said, "I have been to marble murrelet school." This is a true story. Hmm. He said, I says, "What?" He said, "I have to learn to identify a marble murrelet in a timber sale. I go out and I observe, and if there's a marble murrelet, then I have to postpone that timber sale. How do you know if there's marble murrelet in it?" And he says, "You're not going to believe this." But he said, "We go to an opening, and we wait until we hear a bird fly by, and then we try to gauge whether that's the speed of a marble murrelet or not, because they fly really fast and have fast wing flaps."
Yeah.
So he said, "We have to. If we think that that's a marble murrelet, then we have to shut that timber sale down." I go, "What?" He says, "Yeah." He said, "It is so ambiguous, hard to detect. It is just a make believe." But anyway, my point being. That's the last federal timber sale that we tried to operate on. That was 1980, and we have not touched any federal timber since.
Wow.
And that 450,000 board feet is laying there on the ground, gone.
And I think what's important for Oregonians to remember is that we have such a large portion of our land, our state, is it 70%? That's federal forests. That if that's locked up, that's a large portion of our state that's not working for our state.
Yeah.
You know, you look at other states and they try to utilize every inch that they can to be productive and to provide tax revenue and homes, you know, spaces for homes and those kinds of things. So if we have that large of a portion of our state that's locked up, we've done a real disservice to Oregonians because we don't have that land working for our state, for our schools, for our roads, for our public safety. And so again, I think what's vital is that Oregonians speak up. And again, no matter where you live, if you're in Portland or if you're in Florence, Oregon, we all have a role to play in advocating for management of our national forests because it benefits Oregon.
Well, and that's the key, the word management.
Yeah,
because just because there's 70% out there doesn't mean you're going to go out and clear-cut 70% of the thing.
Nope.
And a lot of people like, well, you know, this doesn't look very good. But I'm sure a lot of the clear-cutting goes to where very few people even see it sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and if we're not going to harvest and replant even the burned timber, that's restricting public access to those lands. I mean, people not only don't want to go to those places that are ugly and burned up, but they won't be able to have access because it's too dangerous.
It's a law. You have to replant.
Well,
you can't get by clear-cutting and leaving it. A lot of people think that that's not planted. Well, that's because the trees are small. You give it 5 years and you've got a great big green area.
And I'm not going to take a side here, but I got to say, there's some common sense missing, it seems like, in politics in general, or no matter what side you're on. It seems like there's just people aren't looking at the big picture.
Right.
They're looking at a small picture.
Right. And, you know, it's the big discussion of carbon emissions and sequestering carbon and the Green New Deal. And we had Oregon's cap and trade that was proposed. And I just like to really always reiterate that trees do a really good job sequestering carbon. They take in the bad stuff and they release oxygen. And young, vibrant trees do that better than old, dead trees. So if we really, if that's truly our pure concern, which sometimes I'm convinced that that's not, it's turned into a bunch of game playing and misinformation. But if that's our pure motive is to reduce carbon emissions, then forest management and young trees and replanting and harvesting all need to be part of that. That's an important thing. We're very fortunate that we have that here.
Well, and again, you know, this needs to be a multi-pronged approach. I mean, it needs to be state, needs to be federal, you know, and somebody needs to be out there making more noise than we're making here, obviously, because we're kind of preaching to the choir here.
We do have our daughter Claire working in Washington, D.C. Congressman Cliff Bentz, so we think there's hope. We're glad she's out there.
Yeah, he's good.
Sharing our story.
Good man. George, if I'm going to get politically correct or wrong here, but when you take a Congress that are anti-business and are not business people, the dollars does not matter. And you take a business person who it's like running a household. You don't spend more than you take in and you're bankrupt. You just don't do that. Well, our government does that.
They just print more money.
Pardon me?
They just print more money.
Well, yeah. Well, the federal government, the state, the state, they just tax you more.
Yeah.
So we have in Salem, we have people that are in Congress that are from Portland and Salem and Eugene, which are definitely Democratic, liberal, who feel good about everything and like to have the feeling, but they don't have the sense about dollars and the amount of money you take in and the amount of money you spend. So we need people that are in there that are actually business people, no matter how much it hurts, to cut down on all these excessive spending. I mean, bike paths and all these other things that we spend money on, but yet we have big chuck holes in our highways. None of that makes sense. I know I'm politically incorrect when I say we need to get business people in Congress, feel good liberals.
Business people always need to be in Congress, you know, regardless of what, because you know you can't run a business if you don't know how to run a business.
And I don't think any of these people in Congress will ever run a business. I don't think they've ever signed a check on the front. I think they all signed it on the back because they're either work for the government or they're on some kind of
subsistence
to where they don't really have to create a dollar or earn a dollar. It's all given to them. And you know, with this unemployment deal that's come out now, we actually know people, not necessarily us, but we actually know people who are getting more in unemployment than they would if they were working. So they're not wanting to go back to work because of the excess unemployment they're getting, right? Which is completely wrong. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a tough place to be in. I'm going to thank you both for being here. It's always good to talk to you and find out what's going on. I totally feel the angst that's there, you know, for this stuff. And I just wish you guys the best moving forward.
Thank you.
Thanks, George.
We're proud of the work we do to provide a product for the world and a renewable resource. And we just will keep doing what we're doing. But at some point, we really would love the support of our fellow Oregonians to advocate for our industry. We think we do a great job.
And we are having tours this summer. So be
I heard
aware.
About that. Yeah, I heard that you got like a nice dining, a nice meal, and a tour.
Yeah, lunch, nice lunch.
Yeah, how does a guy get in on that?
you contact the chamber, or actually it was Rotary, and we've got I think two vans lined up, and if the interest is there, we'll do more.
Yeah, and I think it's good for education for the people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we would love to get an opportunity.
And don't forget the end product. That you absolutely need. The toilet paper comes from us.
There you go. The end product. I like that. Yeah. Bobby King, Jennifer King Wagner. Thank you, Mo.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And coming up next, we'll talk with Chief Tom Turner and Commander John Pitcher with the Florence Police Department.